Bonjour, bonjour, bonjour. Welcome to the SBS Cycling Podcast for an episode. Today we look at the season of cycling, the summer of cycling, and we've got, I'm pleased to say, the usual team together because we've got Grace Brown with us today. And I start with you today.
Well, I'm happy to be here. I was stumped for words for a moment.
And Maka, of course, you can't remove Maka from this podcast.
Oh, no, permanent.
Permanent.
Permanent chair bolted into Fed Square. First time back in the studio, though, for
2025, yeah. How does that feel?
It feels pretty good. It feels pretty good.
You're a bit like Rod Laver. You know, Rod Laver's got his own seat in the Rod Laver arena.
Like
you've got your own seat in this podcast.
I do like the sound of that, yes.
Okay, let's talk about the summer of cycling. We have a pretty full-on packed up podcast today, but let's start with the men's race at the Cadel's event. Jayco finally did it, Grace.
Yes, they finally did it. I heard that Jerry Ryan is very happy with the result. And I'm quite pleased with myself as well, because if you listen to the previous episode, I did mention Mauro Smit as one
did
of
you,
my
did
two
she
contenders.
Did she? Yep. She did. That's terrible. I can't remember. No, it was a good win. It was a good win. And that course, tell me otherwise, it delivers.
Yeah.
It just delivers every single year.
You can't, the final couple of laps, always action. I think you see with the women's race now having two laps, the first lap is not as active the first time up Shalambra, and you see this similar in the men's race doing it four times. It sort of builds, and then the final lap is just mental.
Yeah.
Because I was in Shalambra witnessing the crossing, and you're absolutely right. The way they cross Shalambra the four times is four times different. I think it's four times different leader, first of all, crossing that king of the mountain, but also a different way the race was. It was a different pace. So therefore, the tactics changes within that circuit.
Yeah. So it always leads to exciting racing, and the finale is, just... throwing things at us.
Maka, talk to us about that sprint, because he went about 300-400 meters from the end. So he wins
no,
solo.
He went longer.
No, he went longer.
Yeah, 4K.
He went on the descent after that final steep short climb.
Okay, see.
Yeah,
didn't
I don't
have the screen at Shalambra. That shows. So he went, take two. No, we'll take it. So he went longer than 300 meters, but the peloton was really catching him back.
Well,
did you think that he was going to do it, or was he really touch and go?
Oh, and I was touch and go, but it was one of those classic ones, wasn't it, Grace, where that second little kicker, he was less than 50 metres. He was actually, if you go back and watch it, he was 30 metres across that little flat section where they sort of dogleg around and then it drops off, and they balked. No one, and they were all on their limit at that point, and they balked, and he obviously, he had nothing to lose. By then he gets caught, he's probably not going to win. And then he rode away. And once he got out to about 500 metres, I thought he's got a very good chance. Just because of the combination chasing him.
Yeah.
There was one team that had two riders.
Israel Premier Tech.
And they didn't pull the trigger quick enough.
Well, Mike Woods was on the front chasing, but there was a bit of disruption. So there'd be some attacks, and then it would take a little while to organise again. And all of that just contributed to Schmidt staying away.
Mm-hmm. And we should give a fair bit of credit actually to Chris Harper.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's true teamwork, wasn't it? He absolutely could have ridden away and won that potentially.
That was going to be my next question. Mm. The role of the actual team in winning the race. Chris Harper was fantastic.
Yeah, he went up the road, and I think he had a minute at one point.
It started to go out to a point where I thought, this guy's, because we know what he's capable of. Yeah, and I thought if they give him another 30 seconds, it's going to be hard to bring him back.
Yeah, definitely. If anyone could get over that final climbs and still, have advantage and ride to the finish, it would be someone like him. But, he'd done a big effort, and it took the sting out of his legs.
It was the 10th anniversary of the race. I've got a slight small anecdote. When I rocked up to the race on Saturday night, I walked into the lift. I saw Karen Jones say hi. Oh, yes. Hey, yep. How are you? Went to level 6. And then there's a guy that bumped me on my shoulder, and I was Cat Elevens in the lift. And he said, "And you don't say hello to me?" I didn't even notice him in the lift.
He is a small guy.
He was small, but yeah. Let's say I was tired. But yeah, 10th anniversary. This race has made an impact on the calendar.
Yeah,
in Australia,
has.
In the so-called summer of cycling.
Yeah, it definitely has. And I said to Cadell at one point on Sunday, during the race, we had to do a bit of a Q&A stand-up, and I said, you must be pleased, because there was that COVID period, and let's remind ourselves, 2015 was the first edition. Mm-hmm. Okay, there was a bunch of editions before COVID, but it wasn't that old. It was a five-year-old race, or 6 years, whatever. So it was in jeopardy of maybe not coming back, as a lot of events we saw struggle financially, et cetera, all those things post-COVID. And I think it took 1 or 2 years for it to get its footings mm-hmm. back. And I feel like the weekend it ramped back to where it should be, which, you know, the family ride was huge, apparently. The people's ride was huge. Yep. That had record numbers.
Yeah, over 3,000.
Yeah. So I just feel like it.
And the crowd along the way.
Was good.
Chalumbra was packed for both women and men. Last year, we struggled a bit more on the women's race. There was less people. I would say this year, there were more people turning up for the women's race, and the men's race was packed as well.
Yeah. And plus, you know, we had the Wednesday, Thursday. Mm-hmm. We had it for the men's last year, but we had a crit for the women last year.
Yeah.
It was fine, but it was barely promoted. And it was a new thing they were trying to get up. So at least I love it that they had a women's version of Surf Coast and a men's version.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. Last year I said to Cadell, you know, it'd be really nice if the women could have like a similar one-day classic to the men down on the Surf Coast. And next thing I know, it's on the calendar. So the man delivers.
That is the pulling power you have.
Yeah.
That's why we've got you in here.
I should have said hello in a lift. Maybe I'm blacklisted.
Yeah.
Okay, that was the Cadels. Of course, let's pedal back off the summer of cycling. One that you absolutely love, the Tour Down Under. You
are
integrated part of Tour Down Under. Very good element this year.
It is. And you know what? It's a testament to all the people behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And if I can just mention a couple of names, Itaf Rashid, she's amazing. I think she's such a she effectively heads up SATC events, sporting events. Well, actually, not just sporting events. She's brilliant. Jess and Chloe, the other two women who have a big sort of impact on that event. And, of course, Stewie. All of them. No, they've just got it. It's a well-oiled machine. I think that's why I love it. The crowds are big, as we know, Grace. It's just a great event. And when you say great, when I say great event, I mean men's and women's.
Yeah, yeah.
That 10, 12 days is just a big festival, isn't it?
And it's not just about the professional bike racing. Mm. Like, it's a real week-long, well, more than a week-long sort of festival where all cycling fans in Australia come along, they get out on their bikes every morning, they, you know, go to events in the evenings, they, you know, sample all there is.
You get
Adelaide.
The industry go there for that reason, to network. Because they
I'm
go.
The only guy that never goes there.
Yeah.
I've never been.
He's actually never been to Adelaide.
I've never set a foot
shame
in Adelaide.
That is, shame on you.
Crazy. And you call yourself a cyclist.
I know. But as soon as I can go into the desert, follow some motorbikes.
Yeah. He's off. Yeah.
We know where you
we
are.
We need to do priority. Something about this.
I know. It's crazy. It's crazy. But I've even physically never set a foot in South Australia. Probably the only state I've never been.
Shocking.
But anyway, that's no story about me. So you like this event?
It's just great. They do it really, really well. I'm not sure. You know, there's not much else I could say about it apart from that, because there's very, very, if any, negatives.
Yeah.
The only one is the hot weather, and it actually wasn't that hot this year. It was hot enough, but it wasn't the extreme sort of stuff. So
how is it seen on the professional peloton, this whole block of summer of cycling, but with the Tour Down Under inside? There's a lot of internationals coming, and of course they then, because they come for the Tour Down Under, they stay for the Cadel, they stay for some.
Yeah.
So how does that fit in that training / New Year calendar for a rider?
Yeah, I think a lot of riders see it as a really good opportunity to come out and, you know, train and compete in good weather. I think it's a little bit on the long side, the block that they're over here. When I speak to riders at the end of Cadell's, they're always like, I'm really looking forward to getting home now. Like, it's been nice, but
well, at least they've got how you feel when you're over there. You know, you go, toughen
but then,
up.
Yeah,
try 8 months.
You see that realization in their eye when they realize that I used to do it every year for 8 months. So, and they're like, oh, sorry. but, yeah, I think, you know, they love it, but you don't get many Europeans that do it year on, year out.
Yeah.
So it might be every couple of seasons they'll do the Australian block. But, of course, we see a lot of the Australian riders, which, yeah, is great for us to see them. It was a pity that we didn't get any Australian winners, though, this year.
Yeah, true.
Apart from, you know, some stages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the fact that now, we talked about it before, the how the Tour de France Femmes has changed the calendar itself, how you train, is that could that be an impact on the Tour Down Under, or could that reinforce the position of the Tour Down Under to be fit quicker in the year? Or not
yeah,
really?
I don't think. Definitely the top riders that are targeting the Tour de France Femmes and the Tour de France, the men's race, are less likely to come
here,
to Australia, I would say, just because the way they want to build their season, you don't want to be flying at the start of the year unless you come here underdone and not a leader. And, yeah, we've seen also, I think, the fact that some of our best Australian riders aren't winning in Australia anymore. Like Neve Bradbury, for instance, has targets later in the year.
Yeah.
And just as, you know, the women's peloton ramps up professionalism, you have to block out your year and have a proper build. And sometimes that means sacrificing January in Australia.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good sign for me because Alaphilippe wasn't here. So that means he's going to be fit for the tour.
Mate, he's done. He's washed up.
You might need to find a new French cyclist.
Martinez.
If you haven't jumped out of that boat yet, mate, I think it's already sinking.
You will know that I'm a loyal friend, you know, and I'm also a loyal fan. And let's talk about another element of the Summer of Cycling, the Nationals. First time you were there.
Yeah.
How does that differ from the whole Ballarat? And there was a lot of inverted comma controversy discussions about going that far away from Victoria that's been settled
in
Victoria.
I'm still jet lagged, don't get me wrong. I'm still feeling the effects.
But how was Perth?
No, it was brilliant. It was, look, people don't like change. Society don't like change. Mm-hmm. And when you have an event for 20 years in Ballarat and, you know, for the best part, it was very successful. I think we can all agree on that. It needed to move, I think. You know, probably a lot of us agreed on that as well. But Perth did a great job, I think, for the first year. The circuit was, it showed that it was, well, in the men's it was hard enough. The women's, probably the way the race unfolded, it was a little bit negative, but that could have easily have happened in the men's as well.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, all in all, I think it was really good. The finishing straight of the road course was just beautiful. It was just overlooked the city, these beautiful trees. It was a classic finishing straight that rivaled, you know, some of the most picturesque Tour de France finishes, to be honest. And the criteriums in Northbridge on the Friday night were huge, massive crowds, and they were both the elites and even the under-19s and 23s were all great races. The TTs are the TTs. TTs, even if Grace Brown turns up in her world championship colours, there's not a big crowd, is there?
Yeah.
It's historically, they've never been. And that's okay. That's what time trials are. But all in all, I thought they did a great job. And I think year one, and the crowds were good on the road course. So year one, I think everyone, all the stakeholders there should be pretty happy with themselves.
Yeah.
And the feedback I heard even before I got on the plane to come back to the East Coast was that WA and Perth were happy. They were pretty happy with it. So
that's an event as well that has been dominated by Jayco, though. Jayco won both road title for women and a man, Lucinda Stewart, and of course Luke Durbridge. For you, let's talk about Lucinda Stewart. Fantastic win. What do you make of that win? What do you make of that what you would do to her as a rider?
Yeah, it's an interesting situation where
she's from the continental team, not the world tour team.
She's basically come up from the junior ranks and she's starting off first year on the development team with Jayco. So
and on a high as well. So
yeah,
it's a good start.
Starting off on a high, but it can go two ways from here.
Uh-huh.
Which and I spoke with her because I've had a fair bit to. Well, enough to do with her over the last couple of years since. And she's from Melbourne and I'm a fan of her and I was stoked to see her win. She's a very smart bike rider and I think she has huge potential. But we've seen in the past people winning the national championships and racing in that jersey and it becomes almost a burden mm-hmm. rather than a superpower once you get to Europe. And so, yeah, I sent her a message.
Why is that? Is it making you too noticeable in the peloton? Or is it actually you put yourself under so much pressure?
Yeah, both? I think it's the pressure.
The pressure?
It's not necessarily being too noticeable in the peloton. When you're racing, you see, being a national champion doesn't necessarily mean that you're winning races in Europe.
No, but you're at the start of the race. You're a guest. You're starting the front. There's a bit more pressure, I think.
Not always. Not always. It's sort of random. Some races do that. That's an Aussie thing.
That's an Aussie thing.
That's a TDU thing and a Cadell thing. We do that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Parade them up the front.
But it's the pressure. So she might, take on the feeling like she has to perform at a higher level than was originally expected of her to do the, national champs jersey proud. And sometimes that can sort of make mm-hmm. a rider come unstuck in their first year.
So question for you then, and this is such a hypothetical and it's in part of the way that the answer could be obvious with my question, but let's say she has a reasonably good year, nothing not a Neve Bradbury year from 12 months ago, which was exceptional.
But I love the scale.
Yeah, well, that was pretty exceptional. And Neve's not that much older. She's a few years older. But so let's say she has a pretty good year and Liv Alula offer her a spot on the team, so the World Tour squad. What is she, 19? Lucy, 19? She'd be no older than 20. Should she take it? Or do you think, and this isn't just a question about her, I suppose. It's some more other women and men like her. Do you think she should spend a couple of years in the development squad? Or do you think grab it while you can because we're seeing these young pros,
I think it really depends how her year goes. Like if she's just,
settles into the level.
Settles in, she can just, ride and there's a number of sort of process goals that she needs to tick off in terms of positioning in the bunch, how far she's making it through races, whether she's, up there actually getting results in some of the smaller races.
Yeah.
If she just nails
all of that. Yeah.
Then potentially she's ready to go into the World Tour team.
Yep.
But if there's a few things that she's struggling with, she might get some results, but, more of like getting in a breakaway and
opportunist
things rather than really going into the guts of races.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I think it's something that's really dependent on on those things.
And then I suppose that's the good director sport ifs and managers. Hopefully, notice that for good or bad, not so much bad, I shouldn't say bad, but, okay, you're ready to go or no, let's keep you down another year or two.
And hopefully Lucy has, people in her personal team as well that can help advise her on
those
decisions.
Managed by, I believe, Matt Wilson and Dave Tanner, I believe.
She's a great friend of Grace as well.
There you go. No pressure. Now we know you're in her circle. So,
tick. On the other end of the scale, we've got Durbo, national champion. Oh, okay, let's put it this one, because I had a lot of people coming to me at the cadets going, I didn't like the way Durbo win. Come on. Let's put this one clear. Okay, Durbo is a absolutely gem and is going to be a fantastic national champion. And this idea that Plapp should have gone for the extra title. Let's rubbish this out straight away.
I'm with you. I mean, I don't get it.
No, and people also forget that the year before that Chris Harper gave the win to Plapp.
Absolutely.
Exactly. So,
yeah, comes and goes.
No one complained about that.
And they forget the 10 or 15 years that Luke Durbridge has sacrificed himself.
Yeah.
It's for that team, it's a almost lifetime. Every single time.
It's a lifetime of sacrifice.
Yeah,
it's a lifetime
sacrifice. The least you can do is give the guy a leg up.
Absolutely.
Yep. I'm very surprised that people are disputing that win.
Yeah.
I would have thought that it would be very popular.
At least five people over the weekend came to talk to me on Shalambo.
Seriously?
I'm not even joking.
But you drag in that negative sort of talk,
of course.
Too. So, that goes without saying.
They know they can gossip with me.
There he is. Let's go and tell him. I saw it on social media a bit. And I just they're like, oh, this is now you win turning off. It's like...
Bad example for the kids.
Really? Oh, come on.
Yeah. So, let's crazy. Okay. I just wanted to rubbish it out on this one.
Yeah.
And what a beautiful scene it will be when Durbo wins Paris-Roubaix this year in a national jersey.
That would be cool. I like that.
That would be great.
But
don't bring negative talk into this box.
It's a dreamer's podcast.
Yes, it's a dreamer's podcast. I will say no.
He is one of the nicest.
No, you say what you want.
Humans in the peloton, isn't he? He is one of the nicest humans in the peloton.
Absolutely.
And very, he's the heart and soul of that team. He's been there from the start.
That's the only team he had. Michael Hepburn's going into his, just digressing a bit, but I think he's going into his 14th season with that squad as well, one team.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
He's also a very underrated rider from that team.
Yeah. But, fantastic win. One thing we know is we see this jersey all over Europe because he's pretty much at every race that Jacko does.
Just one really quick story. That last lap, so we're all watching it unfold and we're thinking Plappy's going to have to just go past him because they were getting chased from behind. And then it got around the back of the course on that flat section along the river and we thought, this is interesting. What's going to happen? I thought, well, Plappy's going to drop him up the climb up to the finish.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give my producer some credit. Ian Gates, he's come into my ear and gone, he's covered cycling forever, this guy. And he goes, Macca, is there a chance Plappy will let Durbridge win? And at that point, we hadn't really considered it because we thought the way the race is unfolding, turns out he was right.
Yeah.
And then we brought it up in the discussion. And that's what good producers do. They feed you some things to just talk about. And sure enough, Plappy dragged that gap big enough that then they could both enjoy it. So without that also, Durbo wouldn't have stayed away. Mm-hmm. We know that. So that was the ultimate teamwork, wasn't it? Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, we take a short break and then when we come back we'll talk about the world of cycling. It's happening anywhere else in the world. Don't go away. Welcome back to the SBS Cycling Podcast. I'm still with Grace and Macca. Let's look at expand our world outside of Australian cycling. The first one I want to bring here, Pidcock winning. Pidcock, new team. Since we left this podcast, Pidcock has a new team. So he left Ineos. He's a new team. And now he wins stages and he wins a stage race in Saudi.
Pretty good. Good start. Good for the sponsors.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
What do you make of that win, that move to the team? We talked about it before. Yeah, I mean, it was inevitable.
Massive move to a team that I'm still trying to work out. Well, I think
we're still trying to work out the name. Well, like, how do you say the name?
Well, I'm trying to work out where the backing is coming from.
Yeah, Q36.5.
Which is coming from one guy who owns Q36.5.
Yeah.
The clothing. It's a clothing brand, correct?
Cycling clothes.
Now, cycling clothing brands... Arguably, they don't have that much money to spend on a professional
cycling
team.
Big brands that got into big trouble lately.
And we've talked about this previously. So, yes, I'm still getting my head around the whole budget and everything.
This team is like historically Dimension Data.
Yeah, correct. Kubica,
right? Douglas Ryder.
Yeah, so maybe there's some sort of silent sponsors that have continued since those early days.
Well, are they on Scott Bikes? I think they are. And he's staying. There's something that he's staying on Pinarello for the cross stuff.
Yeah, for the cyclocross.
So I think Pinarello are coming on board in some shape or form. Okay. It's like Vanderpool with Canyon, you know. They get this, and now the team is on Canyon, Vanderpool's team, right?
It's like FDG.
Yeah.
But they get this across the board.
Suddenly they have all of Demi's sponsors.
Yeah, exactly. Which effectively pays her wage, I suppose. So,
yeah.
And
yeah.
some. So, mm-hmm. yeah, it's... Which is smart. It's smart mm-hmm. business, isn't it?
But him as a rider, that win is essential for a good start of the season for him, essential for what's between these 2 years.
Yeah, I think it's just confirmed to him that he's made the right decision. But he's also made some changes in that he hasn't raced the cyclocross mm-hmm. season. And I don't think he's doing much mountain bike this year either. So he's going all in on the road goal.
Mm-hmm. What's he going to do? Like, as in, where do you think his limit is? Is it Grand Tour? Do you think he can go that far?
Yeah, I'm not sure because we've seen him sort of fall apart, a bit hit and miss in previous years, but he hasn't been able to really focus 100% on his preparation.
Yeah,
I think for some of the one-day classics like the Ardennes, he has a lot of potential.
Mm.
Mm.
But also, like when you say Grand Tours, it almost can't be this year. The Q36.5 will not be at the Tour de France. Invited at the Giro? Are they going to be invited at the Vuelta?
Are the wild cards out yet for the tour?
Yeah, they are. I think 36.5 is not. Yeah, they are. No, Tudor is here as well because Alaphilippe.
Of course.
The Tour de France wild card are out.
That's correct.
And I think 36.5 is out as well.
You'd think they're going to get a start at the Vuelta or the Giro.
Yeah, they
might. Surely.
They should have.
They should.
Yeah.
They should.
Those races would want someone like Pidcock.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like he's...
Yeah, he's exciting.
He's an exciting racer. And to know that he's trying to go off, like it's a good story to have at your race.
He's going to have coverage.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
from the British media,
yes.
They're still here.
But yeah.
There's a whole
discussion. Can I lead into the next thing?
Yeah,
because this is perfect. This is your job, but
that's okay.
Pidcock out, Caleb Ewan in.
It's in the list. Mm. Exactly.
Wow.
How much Geraint Thomas had to do with this?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I think a lot.
I think you're right. I think he's had something to do with it. Yeah, they're pretty chummy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Caleb at Ineos. I mean, there definitely was a spot for a sprinter in that team.
Yeah, but they haven't really...
done anything in a sprint,
you know,
on a sprint.
Like, it hasn't been their focus.
Yeah.
They've been a Grand Tour team.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen them even, you know... go downhill in the spring classics because they haven't focused on it.
Mm-hmm.
But
that team has morphed a lot in the last, you know, from the last 5-6 years.
Yeah.
From the being the super engine winning everything to hardly winning anything, but competing differently. So could that be another morphing of the team?
I don't know if it's like a strategic direction for the team so much rather than the fact that Caleb was desperate for a spot anywhere.
Yeah.
And probably came at a pretty good price.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. But it's last roll of the dice.
Yeah.
So
but can I relate to one thing? Cavendish was in the same situation. At some point, he was, you know, really dragging for finding a team. He was out several times. We had a lot of uncertain future, but he still finished on a very high.
But
that's problem,
and I mean, I'm stating the obvious, and I'm not trying to be funny, but Cav's won 36.
Mm-hmm.
Caleb's won... five. So,
and is younger, so he should still be in his prime
mm-hmm.
now, whereas Cav was, you know, he was extraordinary.
He won at Dimension Data, he won it. Yeah, he just kept picking him off, didn't he?
Yeah, and even if Cav isn't performing, he's still got a massive brand.
Yeah.
Mm. So there's like a lot of value in that, whereas we haven't seen much from Caleb in quite a few years.
Okay.
I want him to win.
Yeah,
I'd love
want
to
him
see
to
him
as well.
Tour.
Yeah,
I'd love
as Aussie fans,
yeah.
It would be awesome for him to be back.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Jason Backer, how do you think he's... Is he? Yeah. I reckon he was biting his... his fingernails were only... They'd only just grown back at Cadell's, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a bit stressed.
And I love Jason. He's, I say that endearing. He's wears his heart on his sleeve.
Yeah.
And but yeah, it would have been a pretty stressful time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. Okay, another rider I want to talk about, Ben O'Connor. New team, new target. He's starting this week as Vuelta at Vuelta Valencia. Ben O'Connor, can he win the Vuelta Valencia? What can we expect from him this year?
Yeah, well, I was looking at the start list for the Vuelta, and there's some like decent riders mm-hmm. that he's going up against, but it's always hard to pick because of early season form. So yeah, he's.
But how important is it for him to make a mark right away in the team? Because he said in an interview that he always knew he would end up at JCO at some point.
That's an interesting sort of premonition to
yeah.
have.
Mm.
I think it'll be important for him to show that he has a place on the team mm-hmm. and that he can be a leader there. And this is a really good opportunity for him to do that. Whether the team has strategically set this as a early season target, mm-hmm. we'll
to
find
take a
out.
Win.
Yeah, we don't know whether. You know, strategically how it's placed mm-hmm. in his overall calendar.
The race is literally on the doorstep of Matt White.
Yes.
Director sportif extraordinaire for the team.
Yeah.
That combination, Matt White, Ben O'Connor, what do you...
no,
what do you,
I think
what
good.
Do you see
I mean,
this?
Whitey's moved more into a management strategic role. He's no longer really director sportif. He's obviously has a lot to do with it. But and just back to the... Ben, how will he go? If he finishes 10th overall, I'd say huge tick.
Yeah.
Like just somewhere, just show something, but not win it. I'd actually prefer him not to win it.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, obviously the goal, Tour de France is the goal. And so
do you think he's their number one card for
well,
the
who
tour?
Else? Who else have they got? Because Yates is gone.
Yeah.
Plup?
No, I think Ben should be.
Yeah, Ben.
Yeah, Ben. He's proven. He's proven GC at Giro, GC at the Tour, stage wins. Yeah, no, I think he should be.
He's a bit more of a full package than Plapp, I mm-hmm. think. There's still a lot of things that Plapp needs to work on to be able to perform for 3 weeks at the highest level.
And Ben, and this is just, well, criticism or not, it's fact. You know, Plappy sits down the back a bit too much. He's got to improve that. Ben races off the front.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's one of those GC guys, like Pog. Pog's just another level, as we know, but Ben attacks when you don't expect it, and it's delivered him wins.
Yeah.
So I love the way he races. Even sometimes you go, ooh, tactically, you probably shouldn't do that, like the Vuelta.
Risky.
Like the Vuelta, and he almost won the Vuelta because he took 10 minutes on stage six or whatever it was.
Also world champs last year. That was amazing.
He's... He delivers results because he constantly puts himself
It's
there.
A fantastic signing for JCO.
Oh, it's,
you know, even though he says, I always knew I was going to end up at JCO, they probably always knew he will end up at JCO at some point, but it's so good it happens now. Like the year he had last year was fantastic.
And it sounds like, you know, within the team, it seems like he's fit in quite easily. There's always, you never know with Australian rivalries because, you know, a lot of those guys have been racing each other since juniors. But, sometimes there's some butted heads.
But on the other end, he was in a French team for quite a while, and I think he's quite relieved not to be in a French team anymore.
Yeah.
He said it in more measured
words. But he left
words.
On good terms, didn't
no,
he?
He said,
was nice.
He said that in an interview, I think he said something along the line, I'm going to summarise, but something along the line, the French were all right, but nothing like the Aussie humour.
Yeah.
And you can relate, I guess.
It's just easy being
different
with
culture.
Aussies. Like, we love the French, of course, Christophe.
Absolutely.
But you're basically Aussie now.
I am actually Aussie, technically.
Well, you're one person that can know more than anyone about the two cultures.
Yeah, absolutely.
Suppose.
And so, I can criticize it as well.
Yeah.
Any other subjects you guys want to talk about? Because we're pushing it on,
aren't we? There's a few things, but I asked you over the course of a couple of weeks, how's the Cyclists Alliance, you know, happenings all going along smoothly, is it?
Yeah, we're doing a lot of work behind the scenes just to try and get our strategy for the next couple of years in place and just, you know, sort of organisational stuff, but and really making a push to reconnect with the riders and make sure that, you know, we're representing what they actually care about.
And can I just well, this is a statement and a question, so correct me otherwise. The Cyclists Alliance is still not recognised by UCI, is that correct? Or where does that sit?
Yeah, we're not an official entity with the UCI, right. But we've sort of come to terms with the fact that it actually plays in our favour because we don't...
You don't have to go by their rules and regs,
yeah,
per se.
Yeah, we don't answer to them, so yep. We can negotiate with them. We can provide them with our recommendations on certain regulations and like policies that they put out around the women's racing. And yeah, they actually listen to us and they've implemented changes.
So the dialogue, there's been some positive dialogue.
Yeah. So we no longer really care that we're not officially recognised by the UCI.
Because it's good. It's good.
Yeah. And just to remind everyone, because we've had plenty of discussions about this, the CPA, which is the men's, and there's a women's CPA, isn't it? They're both set up by the UCI.
Yeah.
Yes.
And their offices, it's like 13A, 13B.
Yeah. And they are funded by the UCI.
Yeah.
So in the end, it sort of limits what they can do because...
Mm-hmm. Right, it's a conflict.
You know, there's a conflict.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, well, I think that's it for the podcast today.
And on controversy.
And that's what we do. More at the next episode.
Yes.
Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having us.